Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to the Church of the Good Shepherd in Calgary. I'm the Reverend Derwin Kostanek, the priest here at this parish, and as we continue on with these new ways of doing things these days, I'd like to invite you to continue to contemplate this season of Advent in which we find ourselves. It is the third Sunday in Advent. We light a pink candle in our Advent wreath for the third Sunday, traditionally as a Sunday indicating a time of joy, a time of anticipation with expectation in this positive and wonderful way. But I must mention that, of course, in these days, it's a lot harder to come up with a sense of joy. Be that as it may, our joy in expectation needs to be centered around who God is, who Jesus is, what has been promised to us through the Spirit of God, more than around what our current circumstances are. And so I invite you as we begin this morning to contemplate that thought of joy, in particular, seeing it as being sourced in something beyond ourselves, beyond our current circumstance. I know I need to hear that message this morning, and I trust that many of you do as well. And so with a deliberate intention to see that indeed the joy of the Lord is our strength, let us turn our attention now to the scriptures. We read what the Bible has to say to us this morning according to the lectionary readings and explore another aspect of what it is that we're waiting for in this time. A reading from the prophet Isaiah. The Spirit of Yahweh God is upon me, because Yahweh has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of Yahweh's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion, to give them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a faint spirit. They will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of Yahweh to display his glory. They shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. For I, Yahweh, love justice. I hate robbery and wrongdoing. I will faithfully give them their recompense, and I will make an everlasting covenant with them. Their descendants shall be known among the nations, and their offspring among the peoples. All who see them shall acknowledge that they are a people whom Yahweh has blessed. I will greatly rejoice in Yahweh. My whole being shall exult in my God, for he has clothed me in the garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself with a garland, and as a bride adorns herself with jewels. For as the earth brings forth its shoots, and as a garden causes what is sown in it to spring up, so Yahweh God will cause righteousness and praise to spring up before all the nations. A reading from the Gospel of Luke. My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has looked with favor on the lowliness of his servant. Surely, from now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name. His mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, according to the promise he made to our ancestors, to Abraham and to his descendants forever. hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. A reading from the Gospel of John. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. The Gospel of Christ. over these past couple of weeks in this season of Advent, we have been acknowledging the expectation and anticipation that this season is all about by asking the question, what are you waiting for? What are we waiting for? And 2 weeks ago, we had a very immediate and narrow focus. We are waiting for the end to the pandemic. And then last week, we broadened that a bit more so that it would be a question that could be answered at any time. And we suggested that we were waiting for a better world. And in both cases, we saw how the scriptures spoke to those things. And more importantly, perhaps, we asked ourselves the follow-on question, what should our posture be in this time that we are waiting for an end to the pandemic and while we are waiting for a better world? This morning, we ask the question again, what are we waiting for? What are you waiting for? And I would suggest to you that it would be correct to say that we are waiting for justice. This was one of the four characteristics of the better world that the prophet Isaiah had talked about and had promised in our reading last week. If you recall, we talked about how the better world that God promises would be marked by God's steadfast love, by his faithfulness based on truth, by his peace, his shalom, his well-being for all, and by his righteousness, which is to say, his justice. And so this morning, we pull that one particular aspect out, this justice piece, because what we find in the scriptures is that it is something that is repeatedly spoken of. It is an ongoing and important theme from cover to cover in the Bible. But before we dive into what the scriptures say about that, let us simply come back to ourselves. Why would I say that we are actually waiting for justice? I ask that question because if you're like me, life is pretty good. I can't say that I've been treated unjustly in any significant way lately. Life is happening. Things are going well. I would imagine that for many of us, perhaps even most of us who are watching this video, that for the most part, life's pretty solid. We're not the ones crying out for justice. But let me suggest to you that our desire for justice makes itself readily apparent once something happens to us that we don't think is very just. For example, when you're driving down the road and you're coming up to the end of a lane and someone else blasts by you really quickly just to cut in front of you to cut the line, do the hackles on the back of your neck rise up? Do you start to feel angry towards that other driver? Do you perhaps have some choice words to say to him, or perhaps even some kind of gesture to display to him? I would suggest to you that if that happens to you, it probably has less to do with any sense of whether or not that driver was being safe, but the fact that he cut in front of you and you felt injustice. Let me look at it a different way with you. Try this one day. Going to the grocery store, just decide to cut the line into one of the cashier checkout lines there. See what kind of response you get. And then ask yourself, would you not respond exactly the same way? Even though we may not be faced with injustice day by day, the moment something happens to us, even something relatively minor like these two examples, we very quickly have this sense that this ought not to be the way it is, that things need to be straight. It is not fair to cut in line. And so for us, we desire justice actually every day, even if we can't say that we haven't received it. But just as last week we broadened our perspective on what we were waiting for, let me broaden that one more for you today. In answering this question and contemplating justice, let us not think simply as the individuals that we are, the individuals who in all likelihood are living in a really solid place in North America. Let us think of ourselves more collectively, like not even just about our church, our own parish, or for that matter, even as Christians, but let us contemplate the fact that human beings on this planet, all 7 billion of us, are ones who desire justice. And I think when you broaden your perspective that way, you would have to agree that there are many people in the world who are actually quite desperately crying out for justice, expecting justice, anticipating justice, longing for justice. When we think of ourselves as human beings, would it be correct to say that in the world today, we human beings are wanting justice? I think the answer is absolutely, resoundingly yes. And in more significant ways than someone cutting you off in traffic. The Bible, as I mentioned, has a key feature with regard to this notion of justice. God himself is referred to as one who is just and who is promising justice for his people. What we read today in Isaiah 61, is God's promise to Israel for justice coming their way. They had been experiencing difficult circumstances. They were having challenges. They had gone into exile. They were away from their land. They were away from their temple, the way that they would worship God appropriately. They were not being treated well. And the promise we find in Isaiah 61 is that God would bring about justice and recompense for them. That the promise is that the injustice they were experiencing would be rectified. And so it was wonderful words that they were able to hear from the prophet Isaiah, that God would be one to bind up the brokenhearted and to set the captives free. This is all speaking within the context of justice for those who were oppressed. Our second reading was one of the things that we have from time to time in the lectionary. Rather than reading a psalm, we read one of the psalm-like songs from the Gospels. And in this case, it was the one known as the Magnificat, the song that Mary sang when she came to fully embrace and understand the fact that she was now pregnant with the Messiah. And she began with those famous words, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior." Why? "For he has been mindful of the lowly state of his servant." Now, oftentimes we take that to mean that Mary is speaking simply about herself. And certainly she is including herself in that. But as the psalm goes on, as the song continues, we find that she broadens that perspective. Even though she will say, "God has done great things for me, and everyone will know that I am blessed," she then goes on to talk about how God has remembered his servant Israel, that it is for the benefit of God's people that this was happening. And I think we would be able to see the Magnificat is actually embracing and echoing what was being promised in Isaiah. In fact, it even ends with this reference to the promise that was being made. God's promise to God's people is that justice will be theirs. And so they were longing for it. They were waiting for it. Their expectation of the Messiah, the one that we are waiting for, that Advent is primarily about, came from this promise of God that justice would come for them. And so as we identify ourselves with Israel, we find ourselves anticipating the justice that is to come through Christ. But may I suggest to you that there is more to it than that still. And that is to say that when the Bible speaks about justice, when we see the references of God, especially in the Hebrew Bible, speaking of justice, he is speaking more often about justice in terms of what God's people are to do for others than it is what God is going to promise for them. What I mean is this: justice is something that we are to be exercising. It is something that we are to be doing. It is something that we are to be ensuring is experienced by others. And so this emphasis on justice, though it certainly contains a promise of God towards us, it also very emphatically contains a reference for us to be doing just things as we go. Over the last few years, we have heard of a couple of instances, well, more than an instance, a couple of movements that have begun as people are calling out for justice. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission here in Canada is all about the desire to see justice brought for our First Nations brothers and sisters, as the stories of how they have been unjustly treated in their history because of our history. Residential schools, the cultural genocide that would take place, the theft of their land. All of the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission are being brought about in an effort to provide some kind of justice for what we recognize was done wrongly to them in years past. We've also seen all over the place the hashtag Black Lives Matter, largely because of African Americans in the States who are saying, we are getting tired of being mistreated, about being discriminated against, about having racist activity directed towards us, in particular by people in authority. And so the hashtag comes out trying to paint the picture that they have been treated unjustly for so long, and people need to recognize that that is the case. And so these movements begin. And these movements are enacted because of the desire and pursuit of justice. Now, something that I find disturbing is oftentimes what our response is to movements like these. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission came out with a great number of actions that we could take, activities that we could engage in, things that we could do to help acknowledge the injustice that was done to First Nations. And what I find interesting is oftentimes how we have responded to that. And here we, I'm referring to European descendants. So when I say how we have responded, I'm talking about people like myself. And how we have tended to respond is, do we really need to do those things? How come we always have to keep doing these territorial acknowledgments? And didn't people mean well when the residential schools were happening? I mean, come on, it couldn't be all bad. We know that some bad things happened, but, you know, given the thinking of the day, can't we see that they meant well? They were trying to be helpful. Why do we respond that way? Why is it that when the cry for justice being made by our First Nations brothers and sisters is finally heard, and when we are responding, our government responds in a way to try to do something about that, to address the reality of the injustice they have experienced, why are so many of us in a hurry to put the brakes on that? If we were being treated unjustly, and finally steps were going to be taken to allow us to receive some kind of justice for what had happened to us,
how would we respond to others who were trying to stand in the way of that? Similarly, as Black Lives Matter got underway, it didn't take too long until we, and now as we, I want to say white people, quickly added, hey, wait a minute, it's not just that Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Why do we do that? What was the point of doing that? The whole reason Black Lives Matter became a statement was because it was obvious that many people didn't think that was true. And so the emphasis had to be brought up in this desire for justice, in this pursuit of justice. And so once finally this cry for justice is being clearly heard, why do we try to detune it and say, hang on a second, let's just make this clear here. All lives matter. What are we afraid of? Were we afraid that there was going to be a new kind of racism that would emerge? That somehow by allowing that cry for justice to be heard would somehow take away justice towards ourselves? I don't understand why we would ever want to stand in the way of somebody receiving justice. And our resistance towards truth and reconciliation, I mean, let me say, in as much as it is a government decision saying here's something that we should do and we might disagree with what the government has concluded, I would still suggest to you that our resistance towards enacting some of those activities that are talked about there have more to do with our own insecurity. It has less to do with disagreeing with the government and more to do with just not being convinced if there's a case here. And to go to all lives matter is to completely close our eyes to the injustice experienced by African Americans for decades, actually centuries. This is in a stark contrast to what we see in the Bible. And if we are going to acknowledge that we indeed are waiting for justice, and if we are treated unjustly, we tend to be up in arms right away, that when it comes to this aspect of justice, the Bible makes it very, very clear that our posture to take while we are waiting for justice is to be ones who are actively pursuing justice for others at the same time. The people of Israel had as their guide the Torah. 613 commandments given by God, summarized in 10 commandments. And as the centuries went on in their history, that is how they were to live. There was instructions on how they were to worship, how they were to conduct themselves, and embedded within the Torah was a whole lot of references to how they were to relate to one another. Well, they didn't always do a very good job fulfilling it. And when life got difficult and life became a challenge and that exile was taking place and bad things were happening to them and so on, they started to call out to God saying, what's going on? What is it? Hey, what is happening? What's it going to take to see this end? And when the prophet Micah addresses this, he asks a number of rhetorical questions that are meant to represent what Israel was feeling as they are asking God, what are we supposed to do about this? How are we supposed to grab your attention? And so here's what Micah put into the mouth of Israel. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? You know, what's it going to take to grab God's attention? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? And this is something that was referred to in the Torah. This was an act of worship that they would do. If that's not enough, will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? I mean, here they're just saying, do we have to ramp it up or something? Do we have to just start doing more and more than what the Torah even says? And then, alarmingly, shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Am I supposed to resort to something like that so that God pays attention? Here is what Micah's response is to these questions, to Israel's desire for justice on their own part. He said, he has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. The question of justice that Israel longed for, Micah pointed them to in terms of their own actions of justice towards others. In fact, he took the 613 commandments, which had been summarized in the 10 commandments, and brought it down into three commandments. What is it all about? Do justly, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. That is what Israel was to be doing. Those are the priorities. And later on, Jesus will break that down even further and simply talk about loving God and loving your neighbor. But prior to that, we see this same theme being revisited by John the Baptizer. Not in our passage in John that we read, but in Luke, we see this, this instruction that John gives. The people are coming to John. They are being baptized by him. John is saying, prepare the way of the Lord. And the people are saying, okay, we want to do that. We want to be ready for the Messiah. And they come up to him and they ask him, so what must we do to prepare the way of the Lord? And when the crowds asked him that, in reply, he said to them, whoever has two coats must share with anyone who has none, and whoever has food must do likewise. Do you see what John's response is? He's saying that justice needs to be what we act upon. And if somebody is able to, owns two coats, you can only wear one at a time, and you've got two, and this guy is shivering over here without any, where is the justice for him? Share, don't hoard. The same with those who have food. Why would there be some who are overindulging and other people who are starving? We are supposed to see equity taking place here. Justice is what is being called for. And it's not just the crowds. Even tax collectors came to be baptized, and they asked John, teacher, what should we do? He said to them, collect no more than the amount prescribed for you. John says to the tax collectors, look, if you go ahead and take the authority of your office to go ahead and take more money from people than you're supposed to, that's theft. That is not just. You are not acting appropriately. If you are going to prepare the way of the Lord, if you, while you are waiting for the Messiah, are making yourself ready for it, you must be living in a just way. And the soldiers too came to him and asked, what should we do? He said to them, do not extort money from anyone by threats or false accusation, and be satisfied with your wages. The soldiers were effectively the police force of the day. And John said to them, do not misuse your authority, your power, your strength. Do not treat people unjustly with your actions. I think it is very remarkable that John's instruction as to how it is that we are to prepare the way for the Lord for whom we wait, the way to do that is by making sure that we live with justice. Not just asking for it for ourselves, but being a conduit through which it comes to others. And so, perhaps ironically, on this Advent Sunday that is meant to be a joyous occasion, we come to this message, which certainly has a heavier tone. But let me invite you to look at it this way. What happens to someone when they finally are on the receiving end of the justice they long for? What happens to someone who has been treated unjustly and then finally it is brought to an end, or someone turns around and does something for them that is indeed fair, that is appropriate, that is welcome? I would suggest to you that that provides an opportunity for joy to be received, for joy to be experienced. Let me encourage you this morning, as we acknowledge that we wait for and we long for justice, let me encourage you to be one through whom justice comes for somebody else. Hear the cry of those who are calling for it. Whether our First Nations brothers and sisters or people of color, Who else is calling for justice around you? Who else is longing for things to be made right? How might you be one through whom the justice they are waiting for might come? Let our posture as we wait in this way be a posture of action for the sake of others. And in so doing, we fulfill the law of Christ. Amen.